This is Your Life is Their Toy, Merchants in Medicine, by Dr. Emmanuel Josephson, from 1948, A Real Pneumonia Remedy. In 1937, a group of physicians, among whom was myself, discovered that substances of the sulfanilamide group would cut short an attack of pneumonia. I've subsequently discovered that if a proper diet factor, nicotinic acid, is given simultaneously, unbelievable and miraculous cures can be effected. I made the discovery on a 72-year-old patient who was suffering from what appeared to be a hopeless attack of type 3 pneumonia. The discovery saved his life. It was this finding that constituted the basis for the development in England of sulfapyridine, the widely advertised quote-unquote specific for pneumonia. The use of sulfapyridine, however, is fraught with such dangers as the formation of kidney stones. It is not nearly as satisfactory as my combined use of sulfanilamide and nicotinic acid. The development of sulfanilamide and sulfapyridine threatened the profits of the manufacturers of the quote-unquote curative anti-pneumococcus serum. They actually did accomplish the cures that could not be obtained with the serum. Letterly, laboratories obtained for a time a monopoly of the public sale of sulfapyridine in the United States, since the drug costs about 75 cents a pound to produce and is sold at the rate of about $200 a pound, the profits are fairly satisfactory from the viewpoint of the drug industry. Legal barriers of the Pure Food and Drug Act were conveniently let down for this drug, in spite of the fact that it presents some menaces to health. Thanks to the influence of the sponsoring financial interests, the drug received free nationwide publicity and immediately yielded high financial returns. Letterly's initial monopolistic control of sulfapyridine proved fortunate for the stimulation of continued use of anti-pneumococcus serum. The advertising and literature that has been issued by the firm creates the impression that the serum is essential for the life-saving action of sulfapyridine. The lucrative serum business still thrives. Within 1 year, the Letterly Laboratories quadrupled the size of its plant. Now that the serum business is threatened by public realization of its lack of value, it is reported that Letterly is considering the conversion of its plant to the manufacture of explosives. Profits of Medical Research and the AMA. These instances prove how well, quote-unquote, Doc Simmons and his gang have used their control of the AMA to make of medical research a lucrative, subsidiary commercial racket. In this activity, they have had two important allies, drug manufacturers and research foundations. The interest of the drug manufacturers in medical research is obvious. They seek to increase profits by new discoveries or their suppression. Patents and the commercial value of medical research explain why, in the past several decades, medicine's greatest advances have been in the field of chemistry and endocrinology. The profits made on the newer chemical and glandular preparations are unbelievably large. Thus, synthetic male sex hormone costs a few dollars a pound to produce and sells by quote-unquote international agreement, which means at the behest of the German Dye Trust, at $50,000 a pound. Synthetic thyroxine, an active principle of the thyroid gland, costs even less to manufacture and sells at the rate of $35,000 a pound. The AMA has helped materially in increasing drug profits through its quote-unquote acceptance or testimonial and its advertising rackets. This is well illustrated by the case of thyroxine. Thyroxine was originally isolated from the gland substance by Dr. Kendall, a member of the Council on Pharmacy and Chemistry. The patents were purchased by Squibb and Company. Biologically derived thyroxine sold at the price of $35,000 a pound. Professor Harrington of the University of London first determined the correct formula of thyroxine and succeeded in preparing it synthetically and patented the method. Thyroxine, synthetically prepared, costs about $10 a pound to manufacture. False attacks branding the synthetic product as worthless were published in journals controlled by the AMA. The Council on Pharmacy and Chemistry held up the quote-unquote acceptance of synthetic thyroxine. The patents were sold to a firm which agreed to maintain the price of the product at the same level as the biologic product and to supply it to houses which marketed the biologic product exclusively. Synthetic thyroxine then was, quote-unquote, accepted. New discoveries enabled the preparation of thyroxine still less expensively from cheese and iodine. The patents are controlled by the German Dye Trust, and the price of the product is maintained at the same level as the costly biologic product. Commercial influences in research. Quite as important as increasing profits for drug manufacturers is avoidance of loss or elimination of competition. For this purpose, medical research or its publication often must be suppressed. The censorship of medical news in the press that has been jointly established by organized medicine and social service is quite effective in suppressing the work of the independent research worker. And the subsidized worker is readily held in check when his results conflict with commercial interests. In studies on the influence of proteins on growth, Dr. E. V. McCollum, in his Newer Knowledge of Nutrition, stated that grain proteins are superior to milk. Dr. McCollum was then made a highly paid research consultant of the National Dairy Products. In 1914, in the Journal of Biological Chemistry, he reversed himself and stated that the proteins of grains were inferior to milk. In 1919, their inferiority had dropped to one-third or one-half that of milk and eggs. And in 1921, he reported protein of milk distinctly superior to that of grains. The distinguished pharmacologist Professor John J. Abel of Johns Hopkins University delivered before the American Association for the Advancement of Science in December 1933 a presidential address on the subject of poisons. He alluded to the poisonous effects of an excess of vitamin D in pre-presentation releases of his speech to the press. For some reason, he found it advisable not to include that passage in his address when delivered. With the isolated exception of the dispatches of Mr. G.B. Lowell of the University Service, the passage was omitted from all reports of the speech. What may be the possible reasons can be inferred from a consideration of the matter. The Steenbach patents for the preparation of vitamin D constitute the basis of a large and profitable pharmaceutical business which yields a revenue to the University of Wisconsin. Under other patents for enriching bread with vitamin D held by a baking concern, Columbia University receives an income. Vitamin D may cause damage to the brain and idiocy in the infant by premature ossification of the sutures of the skull or by ossification of the kidneys, cause death. In the adult, when chronically ingested in even moderate doses, it may cause arteriosclerosis and chronic catarrhal effects. Those papers which published the reports of Professor Abel's unread statements on the dangers of vitamin D received protesting letters from the company marketing vitamin D bread. These letters protested against the damage done them by the publication of the truth regarding the dangers of an excessive intake of vitamin D. The bakery letter was accompanied by an ambiguous and evasive letter by Dr. E. V. McCollum, professor at Johns Hopkins University, who is now employed by various concerns engaged in the marketing of food. Research activities of Rockefeller Institute. The commercial interests and alliances of research institutions are less obvious but are quite as real as those of the drug manufacturers when they are not identical. The establishment of the Rockefeller Institute marked the firm's saddling of big business and its methods on medical research. From the start, an alliance was formed with the American Medical Association. An amusing story is told concerning the establishment of the Rockefeller Institute, the exposé of the methods which signalized the development of the Standard Oil fortunes at the turn of this century had made life dangerous and intolerable for John D. Rockefeller and his family, and had made of his name an anathema. John D. decided that something must be done to make himself more palatable to the public. At this juncture, Fred T. Gates entered as almoner and public agent to gild and varnish the name of Rockefeller. He was told, according to reports, that any sums expended in the process must bring financial returns equal to those which would be earned by the same sums invested in oil enterprises. John D. was in a position to know that it could be done in the medical business. His father, quote-unquote Doc, William A. Rockefeller, had earned a living with his petroleum oil, quack, patent cancer cures, and medicine shows. Aside from the political and diplomatic advantages derived by the Rockefeller interests from the Institute that have been recounted, it is obvious that they receive more direct and tangible returns from it. The Institute denies that it receives any royalties from the medical discoveries, drugs, and processes that are patented by it, but that does not mean that it does not receive payment in stock of the licensed companies and dividends from such stock. The refusal of the Rockefeller Institute to make public its stock holdings makes it impossible to determine this. At any rate, the Standard Oil interests and the Institute derive revenues from holdings of chemical and dye stocks. This includes holdings in the German Dye Trust, the IG Farben Industry, and others that interlock with the entire meshwork of chemical industries. The Rockefeller interests were represented by Walter C. Teagle, of the Standard Oil of New Jersey, on the board of directors of the American IG, which interlocks ownerships with many of the leading, quote-unquote, American drug companies. Anti-venereal drug and blindness. An interesting drug from the viewpoint of the present anti-venereal campaign is triparsamide. According to the legend appearing on the packages, it is, quote, manufactured by Merck and Company Incorporated under license of the Rockefeller Institute for Medical Research, unquote. Triparsamide is a dangerous arsenical product, the use of which had been abandoned by Paul Ehrlich, its discoverer, many years ago because it so frequently causes hopeless blindness by optic nerve atrophy. In spite of its dangerous character, it is being extensively used in the current anti-syphilis campaign, though it possesses no proved advantage over many safer arsenical preparations. Eye specialists are employed in the venereal clinics to watch for signs of blindness in patients being treated with triparsamide. Jealous intrigue of medical research. Some perspective of the situation in medical research can be gained from a report prepared by Dr. S.S. Goldwater on the subject of the All-Union Institute of Experimental Medicine at Leningrad, published in Science, Volume 79, page 206, quote, "Bureaucratic dangers are encountered in every large organization, and it requires the utmost vigilance to avert them. I have no doubt that at the Institute at Leningrad, precautions will be taken to prevent the blighting influence of too rigid control of the younger workers by leaders, however eminent, whose interests are fixed upon untimely or passing phases of science. I could point to scientific centers in other countries where there has grown up among those occupying ranking positions an unfortunate sense of self-satisfaction, an inclination to continue in well-worn grooves, and a disposition to look with suspicion upon resourceful thinkers and workers who, for personal, social, or political reasons, have not commended themselves to those in charge as congenial co-workers. No one knows what science and humanity have lost through the failure of the civilized countries of the world to provide adequate opportunities for all their budding geniuses," unquote. Dr. Goldwater's report depicts mildly the havoc that has been wrought in medical science by the research racket. Sinclair Lewis's Aerosmith depicts the rare exception of the medical research worker who succeeds in overcoming the obstacles placed in his way by the racket. The capable and fertile research worker in medicine, as in other fields, is the exception and a relative rarity. He differs from the average run of graduates in medicine in that he possesses a knowledge of the subject deep and wide enough to realize its limitations, has energy and ambition enough to attempt to override those limitations, and possesses an imagination vivid enough to discern the means and methods of so doing. Thus he is by nature a rebel against accepted medical thought, which of necessity implies a conflict with the established medical authority. As if this were not sufficient handicap for the ambitious medical research worker, many other medical and social service political obstacles are placed in his way today. It has been related how research and discovery, honest or faked, has come to be regarded as having indirect or direct commercial advertising and publicity value, and as such it is jealously coveted by the political bosses of medicine for themselves, and equally fiercely resented and disparaged in others. This situation was aptly described by Dr. Ellis MacDonald, director of the Biochemical Foundation, in a paper read before the Franklin Institute on December 12, 1936. He stated, quote, "I have found that the university men who made up the workers of university research laboratories were very jealous of their plans and results, as they considered their advancement in the university to be dependent upon their reputation as gained by publication, and their results were their stock in trade. The jealousies and antagonism of the cancer research workers in this country have delayed the cure of cancer many years." Unquote. This last idea of antagonism was more clearly expressed by William M. Malasoff, editor of Philosophy of Science, in a letter to the New York Times. He wrote, quote, "How can we leave the struggle of medical research to scattered individuals and small, ill-supported groups who just plainly hate one another?" Unquote. But the solution which he offered was quite absurd and would merely aggravate the condition. Instead of suggesting some method of creating complete freedom of research, Malasoff revealed his totalitarian bent by advocating the destruction of freedom and the substitution of committee control that accentuates all the evils of the present methods. The belief that some folks have in the possibility of changing human nature merely by changing the name of the form of government to socialism is extremely naive. There is reason for belief that the bitter partisan of the football rivalries may sometimes enter into the scientific antagonisms of university groups. Thus, the work of Weber and Bray of Princeton on the transmission of sound by the auditory nerve of cats was attacked and unjustly undermined for a while by the attacks of Davis and Lurie of Harvard at the time that football relations between the two universities were severed. At about the same time, the splendid work of Swingle of Princeton was unjustly attacked and discredited, thus robbing him of the honors due him. Regimentation of research. Regimentation of research by the organization of quote-unquote research committees has been suggested as a remedy for the situation. It is especially favored by radicals, totalitarians, and by social service allies. Prominent among its advocates are the American Association of Science Writers and Waldemar Kampfert of the New York Times. Kampfert would have us believe, with Professor Alfred Kroeber, quote, "The genius simply realizes the aspirations of society," unquote. He gives in evidence the statement of Professor William F. Ogburn that, quote, 145 major scientific discoveries and inventions were made simultaneously and independently by two or more men, unquote. For the totalitarian radical, this justifies regimentation and destruction of individual freedom. Unfortunately, these ideas are belied by experience. There has been surprisingly little, quote-unquote, simultaneous discovery among institutions and committees, in spite of the, quote-unquote, aspirations of society, unless one gives that name to the theft of ideas and discoveries, or commonplace scientific hijacking.